Morning, I'm Phoebe Murray. A man from the town of Plover is facing multiple charges after he was accused of stealing a pair of women's underwear from her home. Officers responded to a home after a woman reported that all of her underwear had been stolen from her room. Nothing else was taken from her room or the house. So thanks to video from a nearby home, authorities were able to identify and arrest the suspect here on your screen, John Stalker. Authorities found the stolen underwear in Stalker's backpack. He appeared in Portage County Court.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Hey there, Steve. How's it going?
Living the dream 24/7, or living the dream, some might call it. I didn't know.
How's musky fishing been this week?
Did you know you can get like a twice baked potato, Jay? Right?
You bake. Sure, you can.
Right? Yeah. You've heard of those? That's what my sunburn feels like. So, oh yeah.
Hello.
You can definitely get burnt. I look like Vicente and the boys that just put in their new private
suits. Wake you up in the morning, boys.
Oh yeah. Now it has been warm, kind of the bitter end of things here in the South for just temperatures, but you know, just the classic run and gun. It's the rare time that I do it. It's funny where a lot of people expect everything I have to do, and you'll hear the air kicking on. It's hot. Sorry, you'll just have to hear it. Called a noise floor, folks. My apologies. But you'll hear, you know, or a lot of times you think, oh, Steve's never throwing blades or you're never throwing topwater. And that's been the bite, you know, when you get those correct conditions. So believe it or not, Jay, little bit of the run, little bit of the gun.
Very nice to hear. I did not know that.
No, I got you never know.
Muskies cooperate, go with the flow.
What are you going to do? I think I talked about that. A few weeks ago, had some topwater action, you know, when you go, okay, this looks right. But, you know, that's been it. I like it because I get to turn my brain off, Jay.
Makes things a little bit easier.
Throw that, turn handle. Oh, shocking twist. We got another one.
Very cool.
Well, it's fun. You know, I was discussing that today about how nice it is at times when you don't have to. And you know, I know a couple of episodes back or here recently, we talked about identifying, you know, what the caliber of a day is, right? Sure. Identifying, okay, is this day good or bad or ugly or what it's going to look like? And playing that hand, you don't have to overanalyze everything is what I'm getting at. You know, you don't.
Yep.
But there's some days that are not. I'm going to turn that air off, Jay. Hum a tune for everyone real quick.
No, I can't hear it. It's fine.
Can you hear it?
No, not at all.
I remember that we had
of course, I haven't been listening either.
No, of course not. He tuned out. Let me get it so it doesn't drive me nuts.
Sure.
Anyway. It's so hot. Can you hear me sweating now? Anyway, back here in the office, got the thing closed off there. But you know, at times, not over analyzing everything will play to your strength. You know, and the problem is, Jay, most people are under analyzing things. That's why we're here to help. You know, there's been a lot of people catching fish because everything's finally open. Can you believe it?
Yeah, that's true. Canada opened. Been hearing some good reports.
You got the Minnesotans. They're out there doing things and stuff.
We'll probably be hearing from Danny with his Canadian Musky 360 reports.
Finally
soon too,
got
right?
on it. Yeah, that's on it.
Oh, cool.
And the other thing is this. If you're looking for the extra little dial in, we got the episodes up. Jay and company. Doing a little thing. What is it? Wednesdays, Jay? Is that what it's looking like? It's going to be the day.
Yeah, put it out Wednesday for kind of that Thursday travel time for everybody. You know, I thought that would be best. I agreed. Yeah. And setting up. Hopefully, get one or two guides in the Northwoods to stop by, and we can record a Northwoods fishing report in a couple days.
They say you have your pulse on the finger.
It's about it.
That's about it. Now you know what's going on and been dialed in, and you got a lot of help from a lot of good people there. Jake Smitty Smith and everybody.
True.
Those are on the app. Yeah, believe it or not, Danny and Joe Cooper, the Cooper Trooper himself, you know, pumping up the jams, pumping out Sweet. The jams, jamming out the pumps, whatever you got to do, you know, whatever makes you happy. Got a cool message this week, a few of them.
Okay.
Of a couple different people here. So just shout outs, you know, we get a lot of people that are like, hey, I caught a fish, but nothing is more special, Jay, than your first muskie. So shout out sweet. To Tony, got a message from that. And then goodness, it blurs together. Oh, Dave, who's been a podcaster for about a trillion years. He's Amish, by the way, Amish Dave. Shout out to him. Hopefully the rapture doesn't come while the podcast's on. I think that kind of breaks your covenant with God or something. But other than that, shot his buddy Tom. Looks like he got his first fish on a menace. So that's always cool good to see. Hear. Yeah. I don't know. How does that work, Jay, if you're Amish but you listen to podcasts? If the headphones don't touch your head, are you using technology?
No, there's ways around things.
Yeah, no, they're crafty.
They're legal, sure.
They're legal under the rules of Amishness.
Mennonites. Rules are meant to be broken.
They are. What's a podcast between friends, really?
Exactly. You where those guys are out in Pennsylvania, right? I think
somewhere.
I know.
Somewhere. Nah, he's
somewhere.
Somewhere in the ether.
Yeah.
No, there. I'm not gonna.
I think he sent us a CD once too, a few years ago for Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was him. In hell. But that's cool. Big shout out to his buddy. It's always cool to see those first fish, and then for me, it's always, you know, an extra little special moment when they get on. Like obviously, you got a menace when Tony's first one was on the critter, Jay.
Yeah,
which is nice. Cool. Odd bait. I will say that, Tony. Odd bait for your first fish, right?
He was popping and weaving and doing something probably fishing a little deeper.
Yeah, and that's always
in the eight. Oh yeah, that's exciting.
You know, I'm always saying everybody gets their first one on a bucktail, but hey, I'll take it. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying that's kind of neat. You know, that it worked out. So people are paying attention, Jay. They're catching fish, believe it or not. What's the kind of vibe up there? I know you had a rough weather week. Kind of
sounds like the opposite of what you had. Boy, I'll tell you. Yeah, it's been like 10 degrees below normal pretty much every day. And today was the only day it didn't rain. Let's put it that way.
Are we talking IQs or weather?
Well, both. You know, 10, we're all
talking, like, yeah, the upper right. Midwest yeah. forecast. We're 10 below normal. I'm teasing. I love it up there. You gotta take your jab when you can. Stick and move. Yep. Stick and move at all times. Oh yeah, we're just 10 below normal here in Plover, sir. It's 85. No, the tests came back. Hey. Evil. I'm stopping now.
The Plover thing, you know, it's like we got some fine folks that live down there. They get about it too.
I know
the old water tower
once
painting.
You do that, you how do you outlive that one?
It's too good.
You sent me this story the other week where the guy's name is Michael Stalker. What's the guy's name?
Yeah, keep talking, I'm bringing it up.
Jay's gonna pull this up. So Plover delivers yet another Midwestern treasure.
Where is it?
This guy, it's ridiculous. His last name is Stalker, but he gets arrested for like stealing women's underwear out of their house.
Yeah, repeatedly breaking in. B&E, I think his name was John Stalker. Sorry. Yeah. Yep. It was a Madison News piece on TikTok. God, it's just me fake. That's the first thing you said. Is that AI, Jay?
No, it's like, not.
No. I looked it up. It's apparently. The first comment on the guy, if you see his mugshot too, the first comment the guy says, there's no way that guy did that.
That's a rough go up there. Other than that,
it's funny.
What's going on, Jay? What's happening? What's it shaping up this week, though, on weather, water? Have you come out of the 10 below normal, or what's going on there?
I think it hit 70 today. Nice. And it didn't rain. So, bite's been a little sporadic when you got this. It was like, it was one of those circulating lows. Uh-huh. You know? That never leaves. and stuff just kept, it just keeps sitting and spinning right over. So today's first day of high pressure, and there's more weather coming. But no, that there's been some good fish. Actually, fishing was good. Got out 2 hours with my nephew on Sunday, just multi-species. But yeah, we tore him up for a couple hours and then had to go in for dinner. So
good deal. Yeah, good.
It sounds like it's been decent fishing. You know, we'll get get more details for Wednesday. But you know, when I talk to Jake and I talk to Fred and all the guides involved, so
yeah,
not lights out yet. It's just you had to think a little bit differently with the muskies and slow down. And fish were buried in the weeds, and they were also located deep. It's one of those things I think we talked about last week. It's like they're never all in one area. So
not often.
Yep, got to fish smart when that. Well, the situations arise.
Well, I mean, you're realistically, the way this pans out, you know, it wasn't 5 minutes ago post spawn, you know, and you get the
true.
You get the it's funny. I was talking to a Canadian, actually Glenn McDonald, today about just how he feels like you go from 0 to 2 months of everything, and then it's done, right? And for you guys,
he lives up in Eagle Lake, Ontario. Glenn does.
Dryden,
way up north. Yep.
But you go from that, but it's not that different for Wisconsin, Minnesota. It's a pretty quick thing, you know. Now, the fish seem to move their cycle along a little bit quicker, but you know, you need to be paying attention and keep at least a little bit of a mindfulness for where you're at from that still. Right. Okay. Hey, we're only X, Y, and Z post spawn. You know, I say that for you're definitely going to see fish getting caught now on big stuff for sure. Right. Mm-hmm. But be prepared for reversions to small stuff quickly. And my cup of tea, I'm still not slinging big. Right. Just not doing it. Depending on what you're looking for, consistent wise, if you know you throw me up in your neck of the woods, if I'm there right now, I'm still not going to be throwing big stuff.
No, neither. I agree.
Yeah, and we get here, it's shocking. You know, June, almost July. I don't even know how we've gotten here. Right? It's the same for me. It's like it's slower, fast, but it's fast for everybody. Right? When you come into the summer thing. Especially when you're a guide, because it's just go, 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 go. But keeping seasonal perspective is important. And again, not following the crowd or falling in line with the herd. Do not change your whole game plan or change your logic based on a couple people that live 200 miles away from you caught them on big baits. Right? Oh, they're smashing double tens. I hear things of this nature all the time, Jay. Oh, so-and-so got one on us, whatever. Well, where are they? Are there fish? Where, you know, you've got to look at it as a microcosm and really know to revert. Because like you're saying, these cold fronts, things of this nature, it's a up and down, you know, in size profile and speed. You need to be modular in some sense, where don't get committed either way, right? Don't be that guy that goes, they've moved off of that, we're fully into double eights, mag dogs, that whole world. Make sure you at least keep a little element of that spring, that early bite in your repertoire until we get a little bit later, right? So don't retire that gear just yet. Keep that rattle trap handy.
Yeah, and a lot of times you're hearing those whispers of hot bites and whatnot, you know, from people that are fishing big water. Mm-hmm. Big water seems to get a lot more niche-y with, you know, like different type patterns, you know what I mean? Than the small lakes around here. Yeah, it's a whole different world on the big lakes in Minnesota compared to Minocqua area. So,
Speaking of Minnesota, we ain't talked to him in a while. Let's call Dr. Bob. What do you say?
Yeah, call Dr. Bob.
See. Absolutely. I push this button.
Push it.
Then I
hit the button.
Then I push the, I look for.
Watch Bob. The magic happen.
Okay, we go to Bob.
Does his picture come up when you hit Bob?
It does. Hold.
Please.
Please hold.
Oh, no.
Hello.
Bob, you're on the podcast. Let me merge in Jaybird. Hold on.
Gotcha.
Hello.
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 All right, we got ourselves a genuine Dr. Bob.
Bob, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jay?
Awesome. Thanks.
Good.
Thanks for coming on, Bob. That was great.
Okay. Good talk. Later.
Good talk. Bye. Anyway, Jay just said the operative word Minnesota, and I was just kind of you thought about saying it that way, but I was
every time.
Nonetheless, you know, talking about where we're at in the seasonal process and the progress of, you know, we don't need to go big the entire time, kind of that Wisconsin thought of always being able to revert back to smaller stuff. What are you seeing in that neck of the woods? I know you're out on the water. You're in full swing. What's going on in Minnesota land?
Well, what I've seen is basically a bunch of open water fish and stuff that are fish that are off the break lines and stuff like that. So, it's been a lot of basin fishing, actually. There's been a pile of bait out in the basin here, at least in the metro and stuff like that. So, and I've heard the same thing is true, up north on some of the northern lakes as well, that basin fishing is in play. And a lot of that does end up being relatively big stuff. Some folks downsize a little bit sometimes, and that can be productive, but a lot of times folks are still throwing pretty big in Minnesota around this time.
Yeah,
for the big basin fish that are making their way out there.
That seems to be, you know, downsizing in Minnesota is going to the pounder, right?
That's right. Okay. Yeah. We try to moderate things a little bit down to the pounder. Exactly.
Right. That's the
go to 10-inch headlocks instead of 12-inch headlocks.
Right, you know, right. We want to be conservative here to get started.
Right.
Yeah. Downsizing from there. Anyway, I figure, why not grab you, Bob? Bob, the musky scientist himself. What's going on in that world, Bob? We just came out of this thing on a conservation front. Me and you had talked about it previously. Everybody talked about the conservation end of this thing, and we ended up smack dab with essentially a Wisconsin opener right on the spawn. Right? So there's that. What's going on so you broke up there a second. What?
Oh, I said, yeah, things do get a little bit variable with regard to how the weather, you know, tries to trick us and then comes back with a vengeance and yeah, all sorts of stuff can happen. But that was kind of interesting that it played out like that, huh?
Yeah. What are you seeing, you know, as far as in interpreting those studies and you and I had chatted about it a little bit here and there. A few different pundits had taken their swipe at it. What's the real take there? What's the impact, do you think?
My inclination is that the impact was probably going to be pretty minimal to add in a few weeks to the season. I did look up some reading and stuff like that on it, some scientific studies on it, and it seemed like it wasn't going to affect too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason that they institute seasons and regulate the seasons there is to regulate how many fish get kept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really so much about protecting the spawn. I thought it was until I dug into it a little bit. I'm like, nope, that's actually not why they have season openers and stuff like that. It's not to protect the spawn so much, especially for muskies, but it's to regulate how many fish can be kept. So you shorten the season to decrease the amount of fish that we're going to be kept. Mm-hmm. And since not very many people are keeping muskies.
Speak for yourself. Man's got to eat.
Well, all right.
Delicious.
That's right. But not many people are keeping muskies, so probably the risk was going to be pretty low that you're going to do much harm to the population with this. And the spawn situation, folks kind of found out. It's like, well, that spawn can kind of happen any old time. And I don't know. I wish, you know, that probably the whole situation probably could have been communicated a little bit better, mm-hmm. but you know, make people aware of why and how the decision was being made and stuff like that. But I think overall the impact was going to be pretty minimal on the actual population of muskies. And because I mean, one of the things I looked into was the studies that they did do on, they referred to a study on pike, which mm-hmm. that's the closest you're going to get behavior wise to a muskie. I mean, they hybridize, for goodness sake. Their behavior is not going to be that much different spawning wise. Right. And the pike were apparently not disturbed, and the viability of the eggs that they did in this tag study remained identical. They did lab studies on the eggs from fish that had been caught before the spawn, you know, immediately before the spawn. And yep, they found those fish spawning in the shallows later on. And mm-hmm. yep, they captured them and stripped some of the eggs, and the eggs were fine. They couldn't tell any difference between fish that were uncaught pre-spawn and fish that were caught during spawn. So it seems like it doesn't actually hurt the spawn if they even bite during the spawn, which maybe some folks found out is a little bit more challenging than one they thought.
But what do you recommend for someone that just doesn't believe in science?
Well, then I suppose you're going to have whatever opinions you want. And,
there you have it. They're turning the frogs gay, everybody. They're turning the frogs gay.
It's what it is. And they're eating all my walleyes.
And they're eating a lot of, yes, Jay's precious walleyes. Sorry for the InfoWars reference there. It's one of my favorites. I can't live without it. Oh, mm-hmm. Science is just a pain in every Owen's butt, isn't it? Veritas.
Well, for some.
You know, how does it feel to be a man of science in a world of people fighting over flat earth theory and things that we had kind of all agreed upon centuries ago?
Well, it might be a little frustrating at times, but playing whack-a-mole with bad ideas.
Playing whack-a-mole with bad, yes. But, I saw a TikTok, you know, that's always, I saw, mm-hmm. my favorite thing from a scientific standpoint is interacting with someone of that nature, then they get, well, I've researched it, but yeah. Have you
all that peer review that's done on TikTok is, I think that's minimal.
Very, very little peer review. Yes,
I mean peers.
Yeah, all their peers. By God, is freaking. Mm-hmm. They just signed up to go on the other slope of the Dunning-Kruger roller coaster. So, yeah. But
I mean, there is a potential though that I mean there's the possibility of some extra harvest during that time. There is. In fact, and I mean incidental catches, folks right. that are maybe fishing for something else, and that's the first muskie they've seen in their life.
That's probably
maybe the first
most
muskie
impact.
They've caught in their life, you know, with on a crappie minnow or something like that. In a lot of places, the minimum size limit is 40, and most muskie anglers aren't going to keep a 40-inch fish, but mm-hmm. a crappie angler, hey, they might keep a 40-inch fish because
that's the biggest fish
you know,
they've
can't
ever seen.
Imagine that this is, it's the biggest fish you've ever seen. So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
I mean, if you do want to protect from that sort of situation, then maybe a statewide size limit of 50 inches or something like that might be in order. I don't know how that would go or what muskie anglers would think about that in Wisconsin, but maybe that's something to think about that's going to prevent the legal capture and the legal harvest of fish that are incidentally caught by those that aren't muskie anglers. And
that's pretty much how we roll down here, even on skinny water. You know, I always actually, you saw it with me. We did that float trip and there's a sign limit 150 incher per day.
Right.
That's a lot of boys. That's a lot to eat in one day. Really? If you're gonna,
limits like that down there, Steve?
What?
Do many bodies of water have like high minimums?
Oh, it has been
statewide. Isn't
anybody I could gab in their ear for the last 20 years, and there was previously 36s, right? And I had a conversation one time, what about this body of water? Well, no one cares. I said, well, if nobody cares, why isn't it 50? Okay. You wait 24 months and somebody writes it down and they move on with their life because nobody cares, nobody paid attention. That's how that's done. So, you know, one body of water I'm in particular, think about, I mean, when me and Bob went on the float trip, you might see one there if you fish there every day for 20 years. You know, there might be that one odd, but it essentially makes everything catch and release. And that's the biggest thing. I that's why I want to have Bob on. I didn't even know what we were going to talk about, but he and I have gabbed about this on the phone. That's one thing I was always scratching my head of going, once I realized, and Bob's pointing out, because a lot of people do not realize the seasonality is based upon harvest, not anything else, not mortality rates. Or excuse me, it's based on that the expected mortality rate from harvest, correct, Bob?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So there's a real good solution to that, which is, boom, put it at 50, put it at 48, put it at 50. But that 50 number is will stop you in your tracks, I think. And I've even seen from that point, I have seen people get a muskie as bycatch. It's clearly not 50 inches, and they've thrown it in the bottom of their boat. And it was on a guide trip where I actually drove over, and I said, hey, I wanted you to know. Right, it has to be 50 inches. Well, this is huge. I said, that's not 50 inches, right?
Right.
Now the thing's been laying in the boat for, it's 3 minutes for me to get the balls to drive over there, right? Right? It's going to kill me. Hey, hello. Hey, can I bother you for a second? Hey, just wanted to tell you.
You're breaking the law.
Hey, hey, man, I don't really care. I'm not trying to start anything, but hey, you know. Right. Everybody's a cowboy.
Please leave your pistol in the bottom of the boat.
Yeah, I hope I'm not bothering you guys, but, you know, everybody's a cowboy until you're you know, it's just you and a guy in the woods. And the guy was like, oh, really? Had no clue. And then that's not a big fish. I mean, You can't, it's hard to educate those that have no interest in education, right? But I've always thought like that 50 inch limit is somebody's got, imagine that bycatch, right? What are you going to do? You're going to look on your phone anymore. You know, right. And if it's a pretty clear,
did I just catch the state record 43 inch muskie?
Absolutely.
They don't know. They're not paying attention.
That's bigger than my cooler.
It's almost cooler. Like catching a rock. Yeah, it's almost like catching a rock bass. You don't know what the state record is.
Boys, but it was.
Well, we do now.
Exactly. Woo! Frickin' folks, visit me at rockbassnation.com. So, but
I have a picture of Steve with a little rock bass and a little plastic bucket walking hell into a supermarket looking
nailed it. You know, it's hard. It's the
greatest moment in human history.
It was amazing. But
Monster Rocky.
Monster Rocky, they called him, boys. Anyway, hey, you learned something about a new lake. If you want to catch a state record rock bass, it is Cass Lake. Thank you very much. But with that being said, I agree with you, Bob, totally, which that's a heck of a deterrent. I wonder on the Canadian side, again, you know, you look at that 54 number, if that was put in place, is just kind of, okay, this is unobtainium for most, mm-hmm. right? And it de-incentivizes any harvest, because I think in this era that very few people are going to go, oh, I'm going to eat that, right? I see far, far less roadkill getting taken home for lunch than ever, you know? So if you can go to the quick trip and get you a nice tuna sandwich, do you really want to take? I mean, there's people that are doing, there's people that I'm seeing now that are doing, and it's a rarity, catch and release crappie and things like that, which is, whoa, you know what I'm saying? That's almost kind of counterintuitive, because that's such a meat fish.
Yeah, yeah, right. And it's 54 in Minnesota too, for instance. So it's like, it's, 54 is that's a big legal fish. Big fish, you got to be a pretty big fish to be legal.
It's a good one.
I mean, that really just speaks to the, it just speaks to the sort of what the catch and release ethic has sort of developed since the 90s, you know, since the 80s and 90s, that, you know, we just don't keep these fish anymore. I mean,
right.
And sort of imposing that same sort of mentality on the folks that don't fish for muskies is probably, I mean, it's probably reasonable at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, they're their fish too, but we're, you know, it's pretty hard to do harm.
Right.
If it's legally extremely difficult to attain the legal limit.
Right.
So
you're going to be more apt to kick them. I think that's what gets, not trying to go on, I don't think we're soapboxing anymore, but just to the point of like the logical point when Bob and I are just kind of jib jabbing about stuff like this, like we are now, but the harm that is done on fish. What did you say the other day to me? There was a conversation about, I had said something about Nipex or so, you went down the, how are you, it's hard to get some dude to buy $200 Nipex when he has five baits or something.
Yeah,
which is,
exactly,
a heck of, I mean, a point. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah, I was saying, we sometimes, we in the muskie angling community make, you know, the perfect start to be the enemy of the good, you know. Yeah. Like, yeah, we want the perfect tool to release muskies and cut hooks and stuff like that is a Nipex, but I'll bet you could find an $18 bolt cutter with a double angle sort of thing. I mean, I got one in my boat. I call it the Jaws of Life.
Right.
But it's a relatively cheap tool. It's much more unwieldy.
Right.
But it's $20. It's not whatever Nipex is now, $80 or something like that. And they totally get the job done.
Right.
They're much more unwieldy, but they get the job done.
And that point of, like you're saying, like the recreational people, okay, those are like starting out people, and a lot of them, what we would think, a lot of the mishandling martellos from people that they don't even have them in the boat.
Right.
Yeah. Which is just the thought there. Well, moving on from such grim matters, what do you think seasonally where you're at? What are you seeing? Do you think this is like, because to me it almost seems like a normal year? What's the, like, there's no great impending doom?
I mean, I got to tell you, the week after opener, we had 90 degree, you know, 90, you know, a string of 90 degree temperatures, and water temperatures were climbing towards 80 in the metro, like, 3 days after
it's
opener,
done, boys.
Like,
it's,
oh, geez, it's over. 4 days in and we're done. Right. But then we got normal weather and some rain and stuff like that. Now it's in the, you know, it's like 67, 68.
Nice.
So it's, you know, we're fine.
Kind of prime
so
stuff.
I would say we're on time. We're on time is what we're on.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much sort of a normal year. It's so normal. It's not normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've heard like northern lakes were, you know, they were on that 60s, you know, sort of mid tier lakes are in that sort of 66, 67, 65 area. Mm-hmm. And then further north, it's like low 60s.
Nice.
And sort of that sort of stuff. So it seems like, you know, as you travel north, of course, the water temperatures get a little cooler and stuff like that. But season progression seems to be about what you would expect from mid to late June now.
Well, let me,
it's kind of basin fishing, and then fish are going to start by around the front end of July. The northern fish and the mid lakes in the state are going to be probably transitioning to mid lake structure and complexes and that sort of stuff. So we're kind of right on time, is what it seems like.
Nice. Well, let me pick your brain on this one. You know, we tend to lean into generalities, but you're kind of the guy I refer to, and we gab about fishing pressure, right? How do you, explain how many boats are out there on, you know, you look at the metro water. If somebody's never been on the metro there in Minnesota, kind of give them the grim, gory details there.
I would say when I show up on one of the more popular lakes here, maybe it's 1,000 acres, 2 acres, something like that. If you're there at 6 bells in the morning, there's probably, oh, I think there's probably 12 or 15 musky boats launched in front of you.
That's pretty serious. And how?
So, yeah, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, how is one contending with that?
Well, for me, I'm trying to be nice.
No ram. Don't ram anybody.
Not elbowing in front of people and that sort of stuff if we can manage. But
I need to take you to Steve Herbeck's offensive fishing school.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it is. We got some.
There's defensive driving and then there's offensive fishing.
There's some slurs you're going to have to learn. Right, you
gotta get. I think I've heard some of those.
And inflection is important. You got to get the right yakety on it. Right,
you got to roll the R's.
You got to roll the hard R's.
So they can hear him.
Yeah. Oh, Herbie. Anyway, sometimes I, in the quiet moments, I go, wonder who he's bothering right now. So you got a lot of people out there. You're trying to stay out of the fracas. What else kind of plays in that world?
What plays probably is, I mean, to be honest, I mean I used to think, and advice I got from folks that fish pressure was, I'll just fish behind them and fish better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say there's a lot of really freaking good sticks in the metro these days, and mm-hmm. if you're going to fish behind people, you better be special.
Yeah.
So the key is either get there first, which means if they're at four.
Oh God! You got to want it. You got to want it bad. He says. Yeah.
You got to want it, or you fish spots that are a little bit more off the beaten path. It's not. Mm-hmm. They aren't obvious. They're subtle. And yeah, they're subtle and sort of overlooked. And even those are, people are kind of wising up to these things. So it's tough because people are good and they all have kind of the same, you're getting the same advice. So it's quite a deal. So it's kind of either, it's a race. It's an arms race in a sense.
That's kind of tough. I mean, if you're fishing a 1,000-acre lake, Bob, you know, you're talking metro water here where you fish normally, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you get 12, 15 boats out there. There's probably four good areas that you would be like, I'd like to fish this spot here, this one, this one. And there's three guys on it all the time.
Yep. Exactly right. That is exactly what it's
There's a lot of early morning pressure, and I imagine it's probably worse as the sun goes down, right? I mean, that's even a higher concentration.
Minnesota, I would say in the evenings, I mean, we have, you probably get this in the Northwoods too. There are so many folks that will putter around the lake in their pontoons. The musky pressure actually sort of dips. Whoa. It's still there, but it's not like it is at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So evening is kind of a thing. The other thing is most guys leave the lake by about 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. So if you got a midday window, you can kind of, you know, there's these off times that you would say, well, that's not the best time. It could become the best time because you're not elbowing other people, you know, to try to get onto a spot. There's opportunities then.
I'll say this, and to that, I was talking to Jay before we got a hold of you about kind of what I tend to do, not what I tend to do, but the bite that I've been on, it's just kind of like cast and blast and just run and gun, believe it or not. Right. Cause you got the you got the right conditions for it quite often. And you're not far off. There are midday bite windows when you're still creeping up towards those mid-70s, whether it's a solar lunar thing or not. I know we could go in that rabbit hole, but you're spot on. I did want to reiterate that because I catch a lot of fish in the middle of the day, a lot. Yeah. You can see that of everybody's there at sunrise. And that's my spring game plan anyway, playing the warm up. But if you're not stabilized, if you have temperature differentials still happening, that's pretty strong play.
The other thing though that you do have to contend with in the middle of the day on metro waters is, I mean, the fish don't care. It's whether you as a fisherman, an angler, can contend with it. Is now it's wake boat time.
Yes.
And you know, it's water ski time and all that sort of stuff. So you're fighting something all the time, but if you're not competing with other anglers, then, you know, I don't think the fish care about the wake boats and stuff like that. Water skiers, you can catch fish behind the water skiers, no problem. Don't hit them.
Yeah, that will keep you on your toes when you got the 4-foot rower coming behind you and you're having somebody's techno remix of a Kid Rock song. Have you ever noticed people in wake boats have the worst taste in music? I'm just saying.
100%.
It's just like, all right, buddy, congratulations on your purchase of your new wake boat. Here's Douche Hits Volume 1 for $19 a month. We're going to send you another volume of Douche Hits for you to play on your wake boat. We've got I mean, it's not even good. Like,
exactly.
I'm not afraid of the hip hop, right? It's not even good hip hop. It's just like the worst. What is wrong with these people? Douche Hits Volume 1. Anyway, God grief. Wait till next year when I wrap my boat like Kenny Powers' jet ski. That's what's gonna happen. Nice. Just roll out there and give them the old hoot spa, if you will. Oh, well, heck, Bob, you can stick around here. Let's get into some Q&A. We know what's going on. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, what with that kind of pressure, this was still in the brain here. With that kind of pressure, presentation-wise, is it perfect execution or is it stand out from the pack?
Probably both. I mean, your execution's got to be pretty good, and that's hard to do early in the year if you haven't been fishing much, but your execution's got to be really good. The presentation probably has to stand out a little bit as far as motion and that sort of stuff. I mean, I'm not a big color guy, really, so I know there are folks that swear by, okay, if you give them the right color on blah, blah, blah lake or whatever, that's a real lake in Minnesota, then... Yeah, that's good. That's the magic color, but I don't see that. I see it's motion. It's action and motion in the water that matters, and if you differentiate yourself there a little bit and you execute at the side of the boat, you definitely got to do that or it's trouble.
Yeah.
Because these metro fish already by this time of the year were like 2 weeks in. Oh, yeah. There have been a whole pile of baits buzzing over their heads for the last 2 weeks. They've come in and got stung. They know the drill by this point already. They're not fresh off the boat anymore.
let me ask you this, and this is total speculation, right? How deep into the season before every fish in the lake's gotten caught once or been hooked and lost? Quick math. I mean, just make it up.
I will say that there are some fish in our lakes that they don't get caught more than once every 3 years or something like that. I would speculate. There are some that are wise and stay out deep and they are almost never seen. But the ones that are the typical catchable ones, like the typical sort of, you know, low to mid 40s metro fish that you see pretty often. It's probably by the front end of July, most of them have got a little white fur around their face.
That's what I'm. Yeah, I was going to say it wouldn't take long if they're dumb enough to eat a bucktail still. Here he comes. Surely somebody's just whipped that out of you real fast. You know, you love to see it. That opens the Pandora's box or the rabbit hole, though, of if you're fishing that kind of pressure, right, or even take it to that extent, I've said it before, you're going to Eagle Lake, you're going to Lake of the Woods, you can assume the damage has been done already, right, on notable stuff. How quickly do you need to be thinking about outside of the box presentations? Or are you just going out there day one going, okay, I'm not playing the bucktail game or I'm going to do it? Like, what's kind of the motif there as far as figuring out what to throw?
Yeah, I mean, that's
The overarching question.
That's a tough question. I mean, in Minnesota, for some reason, these fish love bucktails.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's a variation on the bucktail theme. Oh, sorry, we have a puppy who's decided outdoors are to be barked at.
He runs a puppy meal.
Call. That's what we're doing here.
Bob, give him your information. If somebody wants to buy a puppy from your puppy meal, they can find him on Instagram. I love it. No worries. But as far as you think blades just play the whole time?
They play often in Minnesota. They do play pretty often, but there is there's variations on the bucktail retrieve and variations on the size and all that sort of stuff. It may seem like small things, but they turn out not being small things. It's like if you retrieve them, if you slow roll them, you're deep.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kicking weed tops and all that sort of stuff. And that matters. That's quite different than burning 1 foot under the surface on eights. Slow rolling tens is not burning eights.
No.
I mean, it's quite a different presentation, and it matters.
Absolutely.
So,
well, let's hit it, boys. Joe!
They hook so well. It's hard. They hook so well, and they work so well in the figure eight. It's hard to put blades down in Minnesota. But, I mean, folks do. There are other things.
Right. But as far as baseline... We got Joe. Just want to thank you guys for all that great information, entertainment. Love the podcast. Thank you, Joe. New to the sport. I'm absolutely addicted. Took a while, but finally started to put some muskies in that. Lifelong fisherman. Can't believe how hard these damn things are to catch. Took your advice and slowed way down. Stay and make them pay. There's no question there, so I just read Joe's soliloquy here to the podcast. Thank you, Joe. Much appreciated. Tucker. Looking to get dialed in on my side skin sonar. I fish Metro Minnesota water and have heard how important side scan is. See, it's self-fulfilling on here sometimes. I also venture out to Bemidji and Cass. How important is side scan with modern electronics that are available now? Do they still play? Well, I'll defer to the doctor. Give it to me, doctor.
Side imaging is still super valuable.
Mm-hmm.
How you dial it in, what I would suggest to dial it in is go to your favorite area that you already know, specifically something that maybe comes up to 8 or 12 feet, something in that range, and it's hard, rocky structure. It's hard. You've got a rocky bottom to it. And run by it on side scan and try to make it look good. Like you can differentiate the rocks and that sort of stuff. And, you're looking at making adjustments to sensitivity and contrast and stuff like that, that enhance how everything looks, that you can see shadows, you can see the rocks, the individual rocks, it's not washed out and all that sort of stuff. And try to get your range out to, if you can get it out to 110 feet. If you're using Humminbird, you should be able to do that with too much trouble. The other brands, they're not quite as good, but they're close enough to that you can probably get 80, 90 feet out and pretty good definition. So I would go to known structure, dial it in after, probably 5, 6, 7 passes on that, make it look good, and then you're good for hard bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do.
And I to your point of having a point, knowing what's there, I think it's so important where people will go out and they're not, I don't want to say familiar. They don't have enough skin in the game yet to know what an area actually looks like.
Right.
So can you're viewing this in a different way of like, get acclimated to an area first. Don't try to, it's my first soiree in musky fishing. I've been doing this 6 months. Don't waste the time. Right. If you don't know,
get familiar with an area.
Get familiar. Right. There should be weeds. Yeah. Oh, no, I was going to say should have some idea what's down there. So you go, oh, that's what that is. Or a reference point,
right.
Or maybe a ramp, something where you go, oh, there's the ramp. Anything that you can reference off of.
Yeah. That's another good thing, to go by boat ramps. That's actually a really good idea. Go by the slabs of the boat ramps so that you can pick up the cracks and stuff like that. If you are dialing in, so you can see like that. The other thing that's nice to dial in on is buoys.
mm-hmm.
that are attached to the bottom via ropes.
Yep.
If you go by those things and you can see the ropes and the shadow on the hard bottom, they're there. You'll be able to see muskies no problem.
Yep.
So use those buoys and stuff like that. And then, you know, the ropes and the chains, whatever it is that's attaching them to bottom. If you can pick them up on side scan, you'll see a muskie clear as day on side scan. So, yeah, that's, I think, a good practice.
Mm-hmm. Having a stationary something to dial in on. Go to the boat yeah. ramp and look for change. Could do that, mm-hmm. too, you know. Somebody
yep. might yeah, because a lot of times boat ramps, too, there'll be sand, which is nice hard bottom, but then there'll be concrete. And being able to differentiate and actually see the concrete slabs mm-hmm. on the ramp, that's
boingo.
The stuff.
That's the stuff.
Yeah.
The juice. Because, heck, take you an inflatable muskie, put him down there. What is? Oh, there he is. No, I'm teasing. Now, having that target, that's so important. Have the reference point or the target there to roll with. Tom, I recently came across an older Bait Rigs Jig and Reaper kit. I know this is based off an old school technique. Do you think this technique is still something to try today, especially for heavily pressured muskies in a number lake? If so, was the proper way to fish a jig and reaper? Jay, you'll have to refresh my mind on what a Bait Rigs Jig and Reaper is, please.
That is probably, I don't think they're producing anything or have produced anything for some time. So Island Strike just came out with one that's right in that vein. You know, it's skirted. Like a 1 ounce jig head, single hook, weed guard, skirted. Yeah. With an 8-inch reaper on the
and you can swim those things. And, yeah,
sure. Fit
that,
real
okay.
easy to use.
I just didn't know the make and model. Talk. Mm-hmm. We've talked.
I think that's what he's talking about.
Okay, so swim jigs for muskies. That's a thing, boys. That's a thing. It's not a popular thing because they don't look like a muskie bait enough for people or something. I've been an advocate of it. It's a heck of a early season thing. Where if you're in really shallow, skinny water, that plays in my mind heavily when I have brim making beds and you have like your sunfish, whatever you want to call them. We can't agree. Your bluegill, your panfish, your brim, whatever you want to call them, right? You know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. When they're mm-hmm. up there making those beds and doing that stuff and they're on guard, if I start seeing those brim beds in and around boat ramps, early stages of that, you can usually score a fish or two fishing like a swim jig. But I've done well on bass swim jigs doing that. I've also done well on taking the blades off of spinner baits and using them as a jig because essentially the arm becomes a weed guard and it doesn't have a blade. So there's that. If you're a hillbilly like me, you can get away with that pretty easily. I work it like a swim jig, which is the funny thing is this. There's only so many ways to work a bait. A swim jig is worked basically like the way a tube is worked. Everybody, you pop it mm-hmm. up, you let it hit, you pop it up, you swim it, you do this. It's an up and down motion. It goes up and it falls. Jay, and
have you ever like pitched into timber with those things at all? That's something I want to try, but I haven't really had a chance to try it yet.
That's when you take your meat grinder or your rad dog or rough dog or whatever spinnerbait. That is money, right?
Yeah, it's a slow presentation. It's not advancing quickly.
Nope.
Yeah, you're probing inside the deeper. Yeah, I mean, most baits are going right over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any kind of blow down like that, you know, yep. doesn't have a chance to react. Yeah, that's the way to do it.
And do you keep the
brush guards on these jigs? Because didn't you say, Jay, that the one they're talking about, that the brush guard is on?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like an oversized bass jig, you know, the old flipping jig kind of thing. So they have those little plastic deals. And you can always just snip off a few of them if mm-hmm. you want a little bit lighter, you know. So,
yeah.
Because they're usually a little bit stiff, they're a little bit too much, a little bit overdone.
Mm-hmm.
So you can bend them and soften them up a little bit, or just clip some off to get it a little bit better hooking on it. Sharpen the hook.
Sorry, that's about to say you taking it out of my mouth.
Junk. Yeah.
When it comes to that, and that's one reason I kind of modded. Like I have a couple that are in the boat that are for that specific bite where I've just used musky great spinner baits and like cut the wire down to get the line attachment right there, right? So if you can envision what I'm saying is you can cut the whole arm off and just make a swim jig out of that for the hooks. But regardless, if you're using that, I think Muskie, don't we have an Ike's jig or something, Jay? Like there's a Mike Iaconelli.
Yeah, those are real similar too. Yeah, they got some. Those are even larger. Yeah,
they're huge. That's what I got.
Super oversized bass jigs.
But you know that it works, and it's a specified bite, but it's the same thing for a presentation. The way I look at it is, they want some action at some size, which is okay. The next bite I'll be on is on a menace bite. And then the next bite I'll be on is on a kraken bite. If that action is playing, a swim jig completes the family. Right? Now, conversely, the critter is to, quote unquote, call it a musky bait, is to complete that family of I need a jigging swimming motion up dirty shallow. I'm not trying to this guy. You use the bait rigs ones you got, whatever. If you look at how you work a critter appropriately, which is a up, let it fall, but you're not hammering it like a musky bait. Ah, that's what I was doing. Right. It's a shallow
a gentle lift sort of thing.
Yep. Gentle lift and let it make bottom contact or whatever. You're pounding sand, you're pounding the shallow stuff. That's where that concept started. Which was you kind of have a family for shallow, mid, and deep, but size class options there. But that, again, if you look at it, people go, that works for muskies, or a swim jig works for muskies. Go, well, a tube does. Difference? What's the difference? You know, that's kind of my thought there for what that's
worth. Yeah, probably the ability to stay unsnagged. It's probably
huge.
A little bit better for the non treble bait.
Yeah. Oh hell yeah! If you're up in
the action, looks identical. They're the same, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the concept of, you know, the action running through and all that stuff. And I mean, with it, like you said on the swim jig thing, I'm not taking a critter and throwing it into a craggy laydown either. Right. That's not that. There's a reason. I didn't say, hey, I got rid of all my swim jigs when I made critter. No, I said I got both. And that's right. That's a little bit easier to walk through. I will tell you a cool trick on that I did steal from bass people is they have some plastics that are like have a buoyancy to them. And if you can get your add a trailer hook to a swim jig with buoyant plastics or get it standing up, you get more bites.
And get
the flotation on it. I can't remember what the hell I was using before, but You if you can get that buoyancy in a trailer, so you got when the swim jig stops and pauses, that you've got that thing standing like it's a feeding fish, because fish, you know, panfish tend to feed a little face down and stuff looking for bugs.
Right.
And that's money. The other thing I'll say on the swim jig front before I shut up is in that if you're fishing sediment or anything, the more kind of commotion you can kick up, the better.
Right? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
To create that feeding, guarding, or bedding thing, right? Because if you think when brim come in, these panfish come in and they're creating those beds, they're clearing debris face down. They got their fins in their mouth. And so they're making these circles, they're making their beds, and they're highly vulnerable.
Right.
And that's what the reason that bite even materializes is a vulnerability factor. It's a low caloric risk for a muskie to go up there. Okay, these idiots aren't paying attention anymore.
Right.
Let's pick off this one because he's banging in place. He's cleaning his bed up. He's not evading. So the trick with that swim jig bite, take it slow. Try to get that bounce in place multiple times because, like Jay said earlier, it's less of an advancing thing. This is more of about saturation in place, making some commotion. Come look at me. See, look what I did. Huh?
When you're saying that, I'm thinking menace, to be honest.
Yeah.
That bait is heavy and that will drop down no problem. And since you're over the sediment area you're talking about there, treble hook baits are no problem there.
Right. Yeah.
If you're in gravel or, you know, sand or something like that, bounce it down there and pick up some debris and see what you got. Because that doesn't look unlike, you know, with that shad sort of profile, there's not unlike panfish profile either. It's not that different.
Yeah, that's kind of that offshoot of, you know, treat it like a tube, do the open water stuff. But you're nailing it, because you've got those applications. And then if there's a bunch of brush, use your single hook swim jig, though.
Yeah, pitch them on in there like a bass fisherman.
Yeah, you're broken. pitch that broken spinner bait, you know. Here, Bob eloquently is nice enough to bring up, yeah, we got the right bait. You got the right bait for it. And I'm sitting here hillbilly and talking, well, just cut your spinner bait up now. Just cut it up. The hell with it. Just bend it right to the throat. I've caught more muskies on junk. You know that? It's just like, remember, Bob, do you remember the one time I made that Alabama rig out, like, in the boat? It's like, all right, give me a zip tie. All right.
I remember.
Hell with this. All right. just freaking.
It looked good.
It did. I mean, that's the thing.
It looked good.
There needs to be a video where somebody just sends me out with a bunch of crap from Hobby Lobby and a treble hook. Right? With Steve, Jay can film it. We've given Steve and Paul a $10 gift certificate to Hobby Lobby and one Mustad. Let's see what he can do. It'll be like.
It's like Iron Chef. You should have like a couple of guys do that. What can God, they come up with the ingredients?
I now challenge Jake Smith. Oh, dude, that's funnier than hell. Jake Smith, I challenge you right now publicly to a trip to the Hobby Lobby in wherever the closest is.
You give Steve and Paul $10 at Hobby Lobby. You give them some fabric rhinestones and a couple treble hooks. Watch out, boys.
Watch out. Jay, that would be a hilarious. We should just do we should do an Iron Chef guide style challenge of, all right, you got parts and pieces. What are you going to make? Of what you've got.
That's after the muskie shop. That's after hours at the muskie shop.
Exactly.
But it all what has else to, do you have to do that day,
it,
right?
It all has to be dubbed in Japanese, though. Arigato. Hey. Anyway. What do we got? Yeah. Doug, do you feel you would catch more fish year-round in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Canadian Shield, if all you could do was cast or... all you could do was troll? All cast, all troll. Big, you know, we're going in the waters of Mecca here. The Shield. We got Minnesota at play. We got Wisconsin at play. I don't think we can compare the three, so let's do each. You can only cast or you can only troll Minnesota. Dr. Bob, what do you think?
I try to be as even-handed as possible between casting and trolling, but trolling right now in Minnesota is, you got to trigger them a little bit more. They've seen a bunch of trolled baits later, so I think you probably catch more fish casting because of the ability to trigger.
Yep. Wisconsin, Jay?
Casting.
Casting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shields casting. Propensity of it's funny because... I'll just chime in and say this, because I can't remember who I talked to the other day where it was Canadian. I can't remember which one, right? They all look the same to me. Is that racist? All the Canadians, I can't tell them apart. It's like Koreans and Chinese to me. I can't tell them apart. They all look the same. Anyway, so I'm talking to this random Canadian. And they said that the topwater bite had been slower, right? And that trolling was slow. And it's like, even for me, last couple of years, trolling bite slower, topwater bite slower. And I don't know if it's cyclical, right? But I feel like right now, that definitely when I'm dragging baits in Canada, it's a lower percentage game than it had been. And I don't believe that's a pressure thing either. Right. And you can't,
judging from what Danny Herbeck has said the last couple of years, I think you're right on. I think he'd say the exact same thing.
Yeah. It's tight. And the thing is this is, and again, I mean, a lot of dudes, you talk, if musky fishing, somebody's always going to be complaining about something, right? You know, it's it's always something in a shocking twist, sure. But you know, a lot of fish, they're just at that contact point, are they holding it deeper structure than one would typically think, right? And it's it's not scope. They're not the overarching thought in a muskie's head is not, oh, there's the live scope again. Right? It's not. They're not going, oh, there's the scope. I've got it. Why fish will stage that way? I mean, how that works and how that interconnects is a question for somebody that I don't know. I don't know why you see the same habits. I'll see the same habits here before I head up north at times. Okay, this is different this year. Oh, that works up here this year. Why? You know, and like you said, Bob, you're trying to be pretty even-handed where, yeah, you'll still pick up a trolling fish. You'll still pick up this, but proportionately, and I would think because of pressure, and this is where I'm going at. Angling pressure is as smart as it ever has been, right? And as good as it ever has been. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing. Most everybody's casting, but the trolling is slower. It can't, you know what I'm saying? It can't be systemic of anything other than that's just the cycle of how fish are staging. Or what's your thoughts there? Is that just a big mouth of garbage?
I think that definitely plays, but I would also say, I mean, this isn't what the listener asked, but if you
never is on this show, me, never is.
But like, I think it really depends on the type of body of water you're targeting. If I'm on St. Clair, I have not fished St. Clair, but I've heard a lot about St. Clair. I would say troll. Like, you should troll. It's got massive areas of mid lake. You know, non-structure, you know, 1 foot is a, you know, 2 feet is a big variation in bottom distance. So I think their trolling is probably going to play like pretty big. Yeah. And in other cases where you have like extensive long trolling runs that are where muskies live, trolling is is probably it. Like that's the key to put your bait in front of as many fish as possible and find one that's dumb enough to stick their face in it.
Right. That's the fun part and the tough part with the big hypotheticals, you know. It's
yeah.
Well, we got
one. I think you're right that there's definitely some pressure to it. Like I think baits pulled straight, even if you're making big changes, if you watch a tube going up and down, that's a pretty triggering presentation too. Mm-hmm. And speed on structure and stuff like that's a pretty triggering presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get in those places with a trolled bait oftentimes.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
That's why I think it.
All right, next up is Lucas. I've watched all the breakdown videos of how to find musky spots on a lake, but I still can't seem to pinpoint fish. I'm new to musky fishing, and although I got for hours upon hours, I can rarely ever get a follow-up and still haven't caught one. He's asked, I didn't see this before I started reading. There's a map he asked for me to mark up, which I will try to find the time to do that. But let's go through this together because there's other people that have a map to mark up. This is something that is fundamental in my mind, right? Fundamental. We are going to take our map and we are going to break it down in depth ranges. Right. So he attached a picture of a physical map. If you have a physical map, Jay, get out your crayons. Stop eating them. It's time to draw. Right. So we're going to take our highlighter, our Sharpies, our crayons, whatever we're going to do. And we're going to color code this map. And to start, if you've never done this, I want you to do it in bands of five. Right. For those of you watching at home, for every bandwidth, so 0 to 5 feet gets a color, right? 5 to 10 gets a color. 10 to 15. 15 to 20. What comes next, Bob?
Something in the 20s, I think.
20 to 25. Yep. Right? There's a pattern here. And so.
Yep. And it's important to choose the right colors, too, if you're not doing that. Gotta be.
Make it make sense. As I've said, the maps on my boat look like a Rastafarian flag, right? I want to have a good variety of colors. Now, easiest for me, you might be different than I find that marking the shallowest of shallow stuff in red is important, right? Okay. A, I don't run the boat up there. B, it makes sense in my brain. So we're going to go from red, right? Maybe we do a little orange next. Maybe a little yellow next, right? Maybe whatever. I those are the only colors I know because I'm a man, right? I don't know the shades in between, right? We got a little tangerine. I could ask my wife. My wife could tell you 7,000 colors between red and blue. I know four, right?
I hear taupe is very soothing.
I say go colors of the rainbow, red and yellow, green, blue.
That was very well timed, Jay. God, jeez, Mac. That was perfectly timed. Thank you, sir. But, you know, come out with a gradient or a color shading, but don't color your map or shade your map so dark you can't see the structure there, right? And that will change the way you perceive a map. Then we're looking at the interplay between deep water and shallow water. You will see things that become abundantly clear after that point. Lucas, I will try to get some time to mark your map up off air. And if you're struggling with this, for those of you listening at home, Douche Jams Volume 1 is available now. You can still call now. Operators are standing by. No, you can get your fix on this. I think, Jay, we've got the videos up there on map interpretation. We're working on the Muskie Shop, Muskie School videos. You'll be able to have those. You know, you'll probably get to delve into those, really put your teeth into those this fall once we're done with them. But we're going to cover this extensively. But in lieu of that, get on the Muskie 360 app. There's a ton of map work. There's an old video that I did that's on the Muskie 101 of Muskie mapping that covers a lot of this. Look for dominant features. If you're looking or you're struggling right now, where are the muskies? Look for dominant features, which are points, humps, bars, right? What else we got? Break lines where all the squigglies come together. If there's a lot of squiggly lines together, that's good. What am I missing here, boys? And
if you got a paper map, they might have some letters on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
Might be useful. When you see stuff like R and B and stuff like that, that's usually rocks, boulders.
Yeah.
That can be useful information as well. G is usually gravel.
Mm-hmm.
It's that bottom substrate can be a key to guessing what other stuff is down there too. Including
they do ask for snags too. I saw that quite often on old maps.
Yeah.
My favorite was on the old, I don't know who made the chip on thing, is the Lowrance map that just had muskie on it multiple places. I'm not kidding. I've caught the shit out of them. Like, there's a place on Highway 70, right? I won't name the lake, but if you find this, if you have an older Lowrance map chip, it's got like every lake marked on Highway 70, be like, muskie, muskie. And I just crushed them. I was like, I'm going to the next thing. I mean, you didn't even have to care because it was just the gift that just kept on giving. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, they've done the work for me. Yeah, any information you can get on that front if you're trying to learn a lake or lake study. In all honesty, a lot of it too, man. It's a lot of this information is lacking in muskie fishing per se. Lake interpretation, map interpretation from a bass angler, you can find all day long, and it's just as applicable, right? Structure is structure is structure. Fit. Now, muskies are going to use it differently, but if you're trying to find out, well, what do they mean? What is a hump? What is a bar? Look up, you know, lake structure. You can go to the app and find some of that stuff. So,
yeah, crappie fishermen are also great at that.
They're the best.
Because muskies occasionally eat. Well, that might be true too.
Yeah,
but muskies do eat crap. They do eat those panfish. So if you're finding those, if the panfish anglers are telling you where to find panfish in the summer, not a bad idea to fish the same spot.
I wish there were dudes that just went out to like fish for suckers. Like, you imagine in a parallel universe, there's people that recreationally sucker fish. I'd be following them around like fur on a weasel. There's
you know, 12 had a guy that did that. It's funny you mentioned that. I almost taped it for you. with his trophy red horse.
Are you serious? Thank you.
Yeah, it was cool.
Bernie Knudsen and his trophy red horse tonight at 10. Mm-hmm. That's late breaking news.
Those things are musky smacks, though. You don't want to ignore them.
Yeah. Put down your dinner roll before you choke and come see this red horse, Herbert. Jeez.
It's a dandy.
It's a dandy. Oh, what'd you get it on? Beaver tail? Come on. What a
cluster of night crawlers.
Cluster. You got it, folks. If you don't know how to cluster your night crawlers wrong, you're doing it all wrong. All right, I quit. I'm done. We're out of jokes, folks. Anyway, Jay Bird, say goodnight. Dr.
Good
Bob.
Night, Dr. Bob.
Tell us Steven. How many years until the sun burns out.
Only 3 more billion.
Good night.